University of Wisconsin Oral History Department. This morning is July 26, 2005, and with me is Dr. Gloria Sarto, who was a resident here and has had a very distinguished career, and also Judy Levitt, who is a medical historian, who may have a few questions for Gloria as well. So, Dr. Sarto, if you would like to start with your beginning,
okay,
we'd like to hear it.
Okay, I'm a first generation. I'm born in Wisconsin, and my father was born in Naples, Italy, and he came to this to the United States when he was about 5 or 6 years old. His father came in advance of the family to first to Chicago and then up to Racine, and he came to obviously get a job so they could live. And Grandma Sarto, my dad's mother, came with the three children then on the boat. Took them 15 days to get here and arrived, and then eventually found a way to Chicago, and then got a ride from someone in Chicago to Racine.
What year, Gloria?
He was 5 or 6, he was born in 1902, so that had to be 1907 or 1908. My mother was born in Amsterdam, Holland, and she also came with her family at about the same age, and she was also born in 1902, they were about 10 days apart. And they were established. My father was born when Kim Racine was really quite a poor family. His father developed diabetes, decided to go back to Italy where he thought he had a cousin or somebody who was a physician, and he died over there. So my grandma Sarto was left here with the children. And so she always had a garden, and I can understand now because I was reading this bit about her, and Dad said she had a garden in Italy. So she always had a garden as long as I can remember growing up. And she worked the garden and kept them going. And Dad was second oldest, and he got a job very early. They were very poor. They used to get coal that dropped off of the coal cars to heat their house, and then they would also get wood along the way to heat the house. Grandma Sarto was eventually able to get a job at the Horlick Malted Milk place and in Racine, and worked there for a little bit. My dad also had a paper route, and they did pretty well. He had, as soon, I think they could get a job when they were 12 or 13 years old then. And so he left school about when he was in the fourth grade, and went to work to bring home some money so that they could live on that. They've always lived in Racine. I can tell a bit more about my father if you want me to do that.
Sure.
He worked in a factory, worked his way up in a factory, and he eventually got to have a higher position and was able to work pretty well. He always had about two jobs, and our family sort of that way. I call it the Sarto genes or something. And so that he was able to provide for us. My mother, on the other hand, was her family came, and her dad was a painter, a house painter. So they had more of a trade, and so they weren't as bad off as my dad was. And so she did pretty well. She went to about sixth or seventh or eighth grade, which is really pretty good. They both were rather adventuresome. My dad wanted to go west when he was a bit older, and as a matter of fact, did go, but he rode the rails to get there. And so he was out west, sort of being a cowboy, so he did that. And my mother went west as well. I don't know how she got there, but she was working in a restaurant out west. And then they eventually got back to Racine, and they met at a dance. And I guess Dad always said the first time he danced with my mother that he told her he was going to marry her. And so you can imagine that. Here's this Italian family and a Holland family. And they had a hard time getting their parents together. And unlike this day and age, they ran off and got married, but they each went to their own homes because they were afraid to tell their parents that they were married, but eventually they did. And so then I'm the third, I was the youngest of three girls. And it was, we didn't have a lot either. When the Depression came, you know, I was born on the 20th of October in 29, so the market crashed right after that. So I keep thinking it must have been a joyous thing. But I don't know that the market crash meant a lot to my parents because I don't think they had anything like that. But the Depression was not easy. You know, I remember as a child that you know, we ate so much apple butter, I don't think I could ever eat it again. And Dad tried to work where he could to keep things together. And so that that was difficult until the Depression was over. And we worked, as a matter of fact, as children. My mother worked in, and with my aunt and my cousins, we went to work at an onion field. And you'd get pick onions and chop them and all that. So we all went and we all worked. And I remember he got a dime a basket or something, a dime a bushel for those onions. And I remember that. But so we did pretty well. And even as a child, I had thought about being a physician. As a matter of fact, in high school, I wrote my high school biography on Elizabeth Blackwell, because there you had to do that. We lived in Racine and then went to grade school there up until about the fourth grade. And then we moved out into the country. My dad had bought some land and built a house. And he, believe it or not, dug the whole basement with a pitch and shovel and dug it himself and laid all the cement blocks and all that kind of stuff that you have to do. So we moved, and it wasn't a big place, but it was rather nice. So then I ended up going to a two-room country school. And I think I skipped the fourth grade, so I went right into fifth grade. And in my eighth grade graduation, there were six or seven of us. And so we graduated from two-room country school and then went into Racine to Washington Junior High School. And it was, so I went there in the ninth grade. And it was just amazing. I remember an algebra teacher, Miss Berry. And she, you know, she saw something in this this graduate of a two-room country school and was very encouraging to me. And she really was rather amazing. And then after that, I went to William Horlick High School, which is still in Racine. And that was fine. I mean, I did mostly, I did a lot of athletics, and but did relatively well. And so when I graduated from there, I was thinking about nursing as well. And we went up to, I remember going up to Marquette with my mother to look at that. And it would have been nice, except we didn't have enough money for me to go to the university. And my sister had gone to a normal school, so she was a teacher. And Elaine went on to become one of the first woman principals of the school in Racine. Mm-hmm. And she is still doing a little bit of work with the schools in Racine. And she got finished, she went to courses and all of that. And so then I couldn't go to the university because we didn't have the money. So I went and I sort of thought I would like to do nursing education. I had that in my mind. And so interestingly, I went to St. Luke's in Racine. And the director of the nursing program there always reminded me that when I went in for my interview, I was on my way to play tennis, so I was in pair of shorts and I had my tennis racket. And she said, well, you know, I thought, well, what about this? And her name was Olga Jordheim, and that was St. Luke's Nursing School in Racine. And she was just great because when I told her I wanted to do perhaps nursing education, she said, was, you know, very supportive, thought that would be wonderful. And so I went to this 3-year nursing school, and we, it was fine after I graduated from there. And, you know, it's back when we had hats and we were capped and did all those great things in nursing school. And when I graduated from there, two other individuals and myself went to Denver to work. So we went right to Denver. When I was there, I started to take some courses at the University of Colorado in Denver. And I worked on a women's unit there as a nurse. I've forgotten, I think the salary was about $170 a month, and which was a lot. I mean, I didn't have that kind of money until I went there to work. And three of us rented a little house. And I stayed there for about maybe 2 years. And then went back to Racine. And went to work at St. Luke's as a nighttime labor and delivery room nurse. Back on. Worked as a labor and delivery room nurse there. And then I started to take courses.
So can we say what years about?
Okay, I must have gone into nursing school, graduated in 50 from high school. 1953, I finished there.
So we're talking 55 when you came back.
And then came back in about 55.
Could you say what labor and delivery were like at that point?
Oh, yeah. Labor and delivery room? Well, yeah. You learn to do a lot of knowing what the patient was doing in labor by. Being there and listening to them. And we were doing, at that time, we weren't doing vaginal examinations to see what the progress was. We were just doing rectal examinations. And I worked there. I was the only person there at night. We sometimes rarely had anesthesia. And interestingly, I'd have to know exactly about the time it would take the physicians to get there. I mean, if someone lived in the country, that one took 30 minutes. Someone who lived very close took 10 minutes. And so I'd have to time when they were about ready to deliver to get them there, because a lot of times they didn't want to come and sit around like we do now, sit in delivery rooms. And so I would have to be pretty accurate with that. But you do get to be pretty accurate. And I was very impressed with the nurses at St. Mary's when I was a resident, because they had that same ability. On occasion, if the patient needed some anesthetic, I did drip ether for those patients. And so that's what we used primarily. After a while, a little bit of nitrous would also help, but that's what we did. And so I worked there, and the nurse was up the stairs, so I'd take the baby and run up and give it to the person who was working in the nursery, and then we had two floors of postpartum. And so that was, it was interesting. On occasion, if I had delivered the baby, I'd deliver the baby.
So you weren't told to hold back a baby if the doctor didn't get there?
No. There's some that did.
That was the big scandal in the late 50s.
Yeah. And, well, you try to tell them not to push, but you can't stop people from pushing. No, I didn't do all that. So anyway, I was working as a nurse, and then I started taking some courses at the UW-Milwaukee. Must have been just starting then, because that was a long time ago. And so I would work nights, get in the car in the morning, drive to Milwaukee. I'd be quite sleepy, and I'd get to a stop and go light, and I would go like this because I knew the person behind me would wake me up. And I'd get home about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and I'd try to do a little bit of studying, and then I'd go to bed about 6 and get up at 10 to go to work at 11. And so I worked my way pretty much through. And I was living at home then, but paid a little room and board, because that's what we did then. We always had to pay a little room and board. And so then I did that, and then I started doing pre-med. And I have to say, there's another person in my life at that time, outside of my family, who was very supportive. I've had a wonderful childhood from that perspective, was Mr. Darian. And she was a night supervisor for the whole St. Luke's Hospital. And if she wasn't busy, she'd come over, and if labor and delivery wasn't too busy, she'd come over and relieve me, and I could go take a nap. And so she was just amazing to do that. And she, they all knew I was going to school. And so she was really quite remarkable in doing that.
Is she still alive?
No. But I remember going back to some of the nursing school reunions and seeing her, and I'd always talk to her about that, because that really was remarkable. So I had little help along the way from blonde folks, and then my family was extremely supportive. I then continued to work through school. I ought to go back a little bit when I was just out of high school. I used to play baseball, and I was a pitcher. And it was during the war, and if you know the League of One of the League of Their Own, that about the baseball players. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a team in Racine called the Racine Bells. And the reason I have to say this, because a lot of people think I was in the Racine Bells, but I played in the City League. And pitched, really was probably a pretty good pitcher. I mean, I pitched a no-hit, no-run, which is really what pitchers are all about. And so when they had their, they had the Racine Bells, they had some of the players from Racine, and so I got to go out on the field with Joanne Winter, who was a pitcher for the Racine Bells. And so I got to do that, and then I also played basketball. Well, Joanne Winter went to play pro golf. She was a pro golfer. And then she became a teaching pro, lived in Arizona. Tell the story. I was working at Northwestern at the time, and Gabe Martell, who is the director of nursing there, was a golfer, and I played a little golf then. And she had this thing to go to a golfing clinic in Arizona. And who was it for? Joanne Winter was the teacher for that. And so when I called her, I said, I don't know if you remember me. And she said, oh, yeah, I remember you. And so anyway, and it's interesting because when they put that movie together, she was one of the people that went out to teach Madonna, who was a pitcher, how to throw the ball, because they had to teach them how to throw the ball. So that was real quite interesting, that whole story, and I knew all of those players really pretty well. So anyway, getting back to Racine and working as a nurse and going to school, I did get enough credits. And when I applied to medical school, I sent stuff out, you know, to some of the private schools as well. When I applied to medical school, they had a quota system. They had a quota for women, three or four women, blacks, and Jews. And so that's out east, out when the schools went out east. So I applied to Wisconsin.
Because some of the Midwest ones had similar quotas.
Yeah.
For women, because that was a dissecting team.
Yeah, huh.
Northwestern had that.
Oh, did they? Yeah. That was a private school as well. Mm-hmm. Huh. And so then I applied here, and Middleton was the dean. And so I think he knew I was a nurse. I was shaking when I went in there, obviously. And he said, well, you know, you won't get any credit for nursing. It was a 3-year school and you didn't get any university credit. But he said, you know, you just have to get your work done and get finished. And so I did. And then I was admitted here at Wisconsin. And at the time, then I was still working my way through school. I worked on weekends when I was in medical school. Johnson Wax and Racine gave me some money. I don't know, it wasn't a great amount. And then by that time, I paid my tuition, but my dad and mom helped me with getting books and things like that. So I was able to get some help there. Interestingly, with the Johnson family, when we were in nursing students, someone of the Johnson family was ill, and several of us went out to take care of that person. So they had this big wing spread in Racine on the lake, which is gorgeous. And you go, oh man, you look around and you think, oh my gosh, it was unbelievable. And I worked nights there a couple of times as nurses and student nurses, and so that was really something different. And so anyway, that I got into medical school and did all right. I mean, I was either top or second from the top. When I graduated, I think I was the top student. And so that, again, I was lucky because I was, having the nursing was really great then, because if you worked, you got pretty good pay. And so that was really very helpful. And so I worked, in the first year, I worked on the weekends. And I worked on one of the medical floors. And I think the head nurse was Mrs. Steen. Did you know who she was? Her son was in medical school also. And so I worked there.
I think I know him.
Yeah, yeah. His mother was a nurse. And so she was, the head nurse there. And so I worked as a nurse to help put myself through school. And it was helpful. And also, I think, when I was in medical school, it was very helpful, because when we started working with patients, that was a natural for me, because I had taken care of patients all along the way, so I didn't have to worry about how I was going to interact. I only had to learn the other things. So I think that That was very helpful to me all along the way, because I've been involved with getting a degree program at Northwestern, because I had a history of nursing. I was on that committee. And interestingly, I still had to do a little surgery at the VA, and they were talking about something. Someone asked me about did I know one of the supervisors in the operating room when we were residents. I said, oh, yes. And then I said, I was in nursing before. And so I said, that's why you're so nice. That's why you're the way you are. And so that was kind of interesting. But anyway, I got through medical school, and let's see, I graduated in 58. And so I graduated from nursing in 50 and graduated from medical school in 58, so that was pretty good. Did a year of internship. We still did the rotating internships at Metro, Cleveland Metro, in Cleveland. And it was a great internship. Of course, the big thing that attracted people was the cafeteria. They had a wonderful woman who headed up the cafeteria. My goodness. You go there on a Sunday, and it was like you're walking into a restaurant. And at the holiday time, you know, she'd have it all decorated. It was just beautiful, and the food was really very good. And it was, we had room and board. Forgotten the salary, but some of the wives that worked, you know, with the husbands figured out we were getting about a nickel an hour. And so, and then we'd work 24 on, 12 off, and then in emergency room. And then we'd be on 36, and then we'd be off. And so it, you know, really long hours. And then we're on a lot of nights. But it was interesting there. They had some great teachers. They had Rakita and Ramelkamp, who were the people who had rheumatic fever. They're the ones that did all the work. John Robbins, I think, who was the pediatrician that I think later on did some big stuff. Now, it was interesting. I had rheumatic fever when I was in high school. And so when I talked to Rakita and Ramelkamp, and I told them that, they said, you got to be on antibiotics. So they put me right on antibiotics right away, and so I was on for quite a while. So that was good, and was interesting from the OB perspective. It was when I was an intern, there was always some folks doing some special work with some of the patients. And what they were doing, they were just starting fetal monitoring then. And so they had these huge machines, I mean, just huge, that they would hook up to the patients. And it was Fred Zuspan was there. And so he was, I think, one of the residents working there. And so he was there doing that at that time. And I really, when I was there, talking about how I got into OB, I didn't know really what I was going to do. Excuse me, I want to turn it off. Getting back to that time, Perry Henderson and I interned together there. And it was very interesting. And I don't know if you've talked with him, but he graduated from Case Western, but Case Western didn't have any African Americans. So he was at Metro, Cleveland Metro. And it was Cuyahoga County at that time. And so I got to know Perry pretty well. And I used to, on occasion, go over to his house for Sunday dinner, because he was Virginia. They, you know, were married, and so I got to go once in a while to their house for dinner. And so anyway, that was, you know, I was an intern, you work hard, did a lot of things. And I remember that my room, because it was gray and I had all kinds of cracks and the ceiling was peeling and all that stuff. And while I was there, I built a hi-fi from a kit. And so I had that at least when I was there. And so anyway, there were some really great teachers. It was really a good internship. So anyway, I was then being courted by pediatrics and neurosurgery.
I'm going to have to turn the tape.
Okay.
Side two with Dr. Sarto. And you are in Metro looking for a residency.
Oh, yeah, looking at residencies. That's what I was doing. And I had thought about neurosurgery for a while. And so I was debating. I had put in my application to come to Wisconsin with Ben Peckham. You need to have a name on there. And
now, how did you decide on OB? You
didn't... Well, I had thought about OB. OB, pediatrics, or neurosurgery.
Okay.
And I would have gone in the pediatric, probably pediatric surgery. And it was hard for me to choose. And so I was debating and debating. Ben called up and he says, "You have to make a decision." Well, he was. And he says, "And I need to know now." And So I said, yes, I'd come back and do the residency here. He had only been here, I think he came when I was probably, did he come in 56 or 57?
56.
Yeah, 56. Because I think when I was going in school, we were probably his second or third class going through under him. And Ralph Campbell was still there, and Madeline Thornton was still there. And he said, "You gotta let me know." So I decided I would do OBGYN. And I'm glad I did. I mean, I could have done the other things too, I think. You know, I've always sort of been that way. I just sort of, steer my way through. And so when I came back, it was interesting because when we met, and I think I was the first woman resident. And Sam Pearlson had a lot to do with that. I think he talked Ben into taking me or something, Sam. And he said, "All right, Gloria, I'm going to treat you just like one of the boys." And I said, "You do that and we'll be fine." And so he did. And it was a wonderful residency, and he was just really a wonderful mentor. And as for you. And I did my residency, and there were times, I'd be scrubbing with him. And I have to tell you this story. I'd be scrubbed with him, and he'd always say, "God damn it, Gloria, pulling that uterus," because I had a gift exposure. And all the time it was, "God damn it, Gloria, do this. God damn it, Gloria, do that." So some of the other faculty, Bill Kiekoffer, they called me GD. And we were at one of the parties of residents or something, and we were talking, and someone asked me about my middle name. I said, "Well, it's Elizabeth." And Bill Kiekoffer's wife said, "Elizabeth?" She said, "I thought your middle initial started with a D." And I said, "No, it's Elizabeth." But everyone in the department called me GD because Ben used to always, "God damn it, Gloria this, God damn it, Gloria that." And having grown an Italian family, that kind of stuff didn't bother me very much. And that probably was all right because, there's a lot of loud talking and all that stuff in Italian families. And so it was right. He did treat me just like one of the boys. And I remember going to, we then rotated at St. Mary's and then Madison General, which is now Meritor. And we were on then every day and every other night. And Ev Rowley and I were at that same level. And to get a weekend off, we started on Saturday morning and worked until Monday evening. And then you got the next weekend off. So we were in the hospital a lot. St. Mary's, finally, I got, and I used to sometimes sleep on the delivery room table because they didn't have a lot of places for me to sleep. If they had an empty room, I would sleep on that. And finally, we did have a room that we had, and so they finally realized it'd be okay if we shared the same room, but we were on other nights. And so we... We did
this
that.
Is it. Was there no women's dressing room or anything?
No. No women's dressing room.
You didn't go in with the nurses to dress.
I didn't even, then I don't even know where the nurses dressed. And I used to shower in an empty patient room. Mm-hmm. Then at Madison, at then Madison General, now Meritor, they finally had a room there. And but I didn't have any showering or anything like that. And so I went to bed. God damn it, Gloria. I said, you said you're going to treat me like one of the boys. I said, you go over and see what the boys have. Then you look at what I have. Mm-hmm. And he did. And by golly, he changed it. I mean, it was really remarkable. He got me a place where I could sleep and have a shower. And so there, you know, we'd scrub with the people over there. And Bill Lidke, I scrubbed with him quite a bit. And he was a generalist in town. And I was scrubbed with him one time and something wasn't going well. And I said, for heaven's sakes. And he said, and God damn it, Gloria, quit your swearing. He just said it. Right after him, he knew, because I was doing it for heaven's sakes, and he said, oh, God damn it, Gloria, quit your swearing, and so it was so, but he was, they were great. I mean, we'd go down the cafeteria, and they'd always pile the food on your tray, and so it was really, really good from that perspective. At the university hospitals, we still had labor and delivery there. And it was on 3B, and Gynae was on 3 West then. And, but what happened, well, I can talk about that after I finished my residency, but it was there that I really started playing golf because Helen Holt was one of the nurses in labor and delivery, and she played golf, and she had a brother who was a pro. And so she said, you know, and I'd play, and she's playing a city tournament. And I thought, oh, I can't play in a city tournament. She said, yes, you can. And the first set of golf clubs I got, I think, when I was just finishing nursing. And so I, you know, and I remember it was still, they had them hid behind the drapes, and then we'd had them open all our gifts, and they got the golf clubs out, and you had a 1 and a 3 wood, and about a 3, 5, 7, and 9 iron, didn't even have a full set. So when I was with at the U with Helen Holt, she took me to Blackhawk, and we bought a whole set of clubs, and that was the first whole set of clubs I had. So I did play in some of the city tournaments, and I finally ended up with a reasonable handicap, but I never played a whole lot. So,
your relationships with the nurses was very good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And do you think that was because you had been a nurse, or
I don't know.
How open do you think they were to women physicians in general?
Oh, they were, at least to women physicians, I don't know. There weren't that many of us. But I had no problems with them. They were really great. Even in the operating rooms, I mean, I just, whatever I needed. Same thing. Well, at St. Mary's, I think it helped that I was a labor and delivery room nurse because those nurses were tough, and they didn't put up with much. And the fact I had been a labor and delivery room nurse and I knew what the patients were doing, which a lot of folks wouldn't know because, you know, you'd learn that. And so they, you know, I had a good time over there. And as a matter of fact, I've forgotten the nun who was in charge of labor and delivery there. But we got to be pretty good friends. And I always, I'll never forget that because she worked so hard and they got no pay and never had any insurance. I remember when they're trying to get health care, they'd have to find one of the docs that would take care of them. And I always thought that's just horrible. So I kept saying, why do you stay in this business? You know, why did you get out? And so anyway, that was, you know, I was busy there and we got along very well with the nurses. Then when I was a student, I went to Rhinelander and for my preceptorship and also at a Catholic hospital. And there it was interesting because the nuns up there, they used to drink beer. And I was kind of surprised that, no, I never thought.
In the hospital?
Well, they had their living quarters right there. So when I would be down in my little room down in the basement, they'd come down and, you know, they had those habits with those huge pockets, and all of a sudden they'd reach way down in one of those pockets and come up with some soda or something. I didn't drink beer then, but anyway, they'd go down and they'd stop by and they would give me something. And then also because they keep saying, you know, a Sarto, there was Pope Pius X was a Sarto. And so they always said, you're so nice, but too bad you're not Catholic. And so when I left there, they gave me a thing with Pope Pius X and the Sarto and the, you know, the little few threads I was supposed to be from his robe. But so they, and as a matter of fact, that Sarto was a relative. And so it was interesting, but they'd always say, oh, you're so nice, but too bad you're not Catholic. And anyway, so when I was a resident, it was a great residency. We learned a lot.
So what was OB practice like in the, this is 59 to 63, about?
Yeah.
Was anesthesia used pretty routinely or not?
We could get anesthesia. Sometimes they wouldn't want to come and give the anesthetic. Or if the patient didn't do exactly what they were supposed to do, they get angry, you know. And I used to see that sometimes, and I used to think, oh my gosh, you know, here she is, needs some, and she might, you know, how you sometimes, some, you know, when you have a hard time with pain. And they would just take the mask and put it on next to him and walk out of the room, and I thought, you know, some of our anesthesiologists in town, the ones at the U were pretty good. But they used to use, what were they using now? I want to say cocaine, but I'm not sure it was that. For pain relief. That was really good because it didn't affect the kids, but then they stopped using it. I don't think it was cocaine, but it was something. After that, I'd have to look it up. And, but then we had pretty good folks. Betty Bamforth was an anesthesiologist when we were here, and so she, you know, was good. So anyway, we didn't have a large number of deliveries. Our, as residents, we took care of our patients were, at least at the U, were mostly graduate students' wives that we took care of. And so, and that was nice. And the, one of the first women, the first patients I went in to see didn't want to have a woman doctor. She just didn't want to have a woman doctor. And so, but I, she got to know me, and then I delivered her. And so when she came back with her second one, that she wanted to have a woman doctor. But you know, when women were first there, people did not want women doctors. And so it's interesting that now it's turned around, you know, everyone wants women. But that was... yeah, and the residency was fine. I remember Ralph Campbell was there and Madeline Thornton when I was a resident. And she was really quite good, but just so reserved. If if I'd always kind of watch for her, but if we were sitting around the table working on our medical records or something, she would come to in the room, but never say anything. And then I would say, Dr. Thornton, you want to make rounds? She'd say, yes. But she wouldn't come in and say, all right, let's make rounds. And so that's just how she was. And she, so that's rather amazing that she was here. And she came from, where was Ralph Campbell before he came here?
Hopkins.
And she came, I think, after he came. And so Ralph Campbell was chair here, and then he probably brought Madeline Thornton. And so she was here, and she really was very good. She had wonderful patients and took care of a lot of faculty, and she really did an amazing job. And she never drove. She always had came in a taxi. And if you would go some places and pick her up, she would go to some of the meetings, but she didn't do a lot of that either. She was pretty shy, I don't know, shy or reserved, I think. And so that was interesting. And I'd always watch her, and I always thought about that. She really must have had a hard time at one time and just kind of went around. And when she was there, Ralph Campbell just, he'd go up to meetings and she'd just automatically take care of everything. She never got to go. She was always there.
No, and I think Dr. Harris treated her the same way.
Yeah.
The former chairman.
Yeah, that's right. She was
because
just
Ben tried to get her to go to some of the meetings. He thought it would be nice for her to see what other people were doing. And she wouldn't ever
She wouldn't go.
I'm not sure she ever took a vacation.
I don't either.
She wasn't promoted ever to full, was she? I think she retired as an associate.
Did she?
I think so.
Well, they were trained at Hopkins at that time in either OB or GYN. I don't think they got a combined residency.
But you know, she did both. She didn't do a lot of gynae.
No.
And when we were residents, we did a lot with her on her cases after a bit. And so we always had senior residents scrubbing with her pretty much. And you'd be operating pretty soon. We'd be operating, you know, that's just how it was. But she was so attentive to her patients, and she was really remarkable in many ways. So anyway, that was the residency. What else about the residency can I tell you?
Had the natural childbirth hit by then? The Reed method might have.
Maybe that. Of course, the Lamaze stuff came, I think, shortly after I graduated. I finished the residency. It was on faculty.
Yeah, we can get to that later. Yeah. But I thought maybe the Reed method was there.
And we're only delivering about 400 or 450 babies at the university then.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the faculty had obstetric patients. And so I think we're just using things like Demerol and stuff like that at that time. And then when we had anesthesia there, they would help out. But we weren't doing anything other than that. And the faculty that were there was Lee Kennan, Bill Kiekhofer, Madeline Thornton, Ben, and
Al Schultz.
Al Schultz, he was just a little bit ahead of, you know, a little bit ahead of me, but yeah, he was on the faculty.
And Weir Horswell was a resident with you?
Weir Horswell was ahead of me. He was, as a matter of fact, at St. Mary's as a chief resident, I think, when I was a first-year resident. And so I think Weir and Al Schultz were together. Or was Al Schultz ahead of that? But, and so Al Schultz came on, and then we had a couple people doing some research in the department. But those were primarily faculty. Bill Kiekhofer was sort of the residency director, and he was really very good with the residents all the time.
And so then you decided to get a PhD.
Well, then when I'll tell you that story. I finished the residency and decided to stay on, and Ben gave me a position. And I got a salary of about $10,000 a year, and which was a lot. And that's at the same time, it was shortly after my first or second year that I started going to John Subi. So, you know, I've known John Subi from Subi von Hayden for a long time. And so I finished that and then stayed on the faculty and doing what most faculty do, you know, covering GYN and covering obstetrics. And, you know, you come in for the deliveries. With Ben, we always came in for the delivery. We weren't there the whole time. But came in for the delivery, and and then I just was working, and John Opitz was a pediatric dysmorphologist, and he was studying Turner syndrome patients. And at that time, they had street gonads and have no estrogens, but there was a concern that perhaps they would undergo neoplastic change. And so he asked me to be involved to take out the street gonads on the Turner syndrome patients to prevent them from getting neoplastic changes. And so that just happened, started for a short time. I then said, well, gee, if I'm going to do that, I ought to learn a little bit about Turner syndrome, which is a 45X. Abnormality. And so I started doing that. And so I started doing a little bit of genetics, which is what that was. And so while I was doing that, sitting in on the courses, Eva Patel, which is Klaus Patel's wife, and so if you're going to be sitting there, take them for credit. And so, that's all right. So I started taking these courses for credit. And I was an instructor and an assistant professor in the department. And you know, I was lucky because if I had a class, Bill Kiekhofer would cover, or Ben would cover, or somebody would cover for me. And so that... Again, I had a lot of help along the way, as you can see. It was rather amazing when you think about it. And so I did that. And then I thought, well, gee, maybe I ought to think about getting a PhD. So I went in and talked to somebody, and they said, well, you're going to have to go back and take all the biostatistics. You have to be able to do French and German, which I don't have to do anymore. And they said, you have to go back and take chemistry. I said, I have all that chemistry. They said, but that was pre-DNA. So that was before Watson and Crick came out with their double helix. And I thought, now I say, I couldn't be pre-DNA. DNA preceded all of us. I mean, how can I be pre-DNA? And so I went back and took all those courses, wow, besides all the genetic courses. And it was wonderful because the hospital was here and genetics was right across the way. I just had to walk through the parking lot. And so Jim Crow and Ava Patel, Klaus Patel, who did the Patel syndrome, and they had potato geneticists and corn geneticists, because we learned a lot from the ag school, came over and taught us genetics, the really classic genetics. And so then... That was sort of Ava saying that. And I said, well, you know, so she said, why don't you get the PhD? So then my PhD thesis was looking at sex chromosome abnormalities, and which came in very nicely with OBGYN. I sent letters out to all of the gynecologists in the state, and I was looking for patients with primary amenorrhea. And so they'd let me know when they had one, and I'd go down to Milwaukee, and I'd see a few patients with primary amenorrhea, and I'd get blood from them, because I was interested in looking at X chromosome abnormalities, not just 45X, which is very typically Turner syndrome, but the other types of X chromosome abnormalities. And we found some really fascinating, interesting X chromosome abnormalities. And so I did that. I had 50 patients with primary amenorrhea and 50 controls. And the controls were all women who, from on our postpartum unit. I'd go in and ask if they'd give blood. And so I finished that and with Klaus and Eva and John Opitz.
And the same time, you're still on the faculty.
Still on the faculty, doing working full time. Yeah, yeah.
So, when did you sleep?
Well, didn't do that much. And it was interesting because when I had to do my thesis defense, I was on call. And that night, everyone said, oh, you should take off. I said, no, I can't take off. If I take off, I'll probably get a migraine. And so I didn't. I mean, if I would let down, I would have had a migraine headache. Yeah, and so I just did, you know, got my, did my thesis and my defense. And so I finally got my PhD, and that was in, what, 71 here?
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't even too bad, because I finished my residency in, what, 63, and hung around there for a while, and then got my PhD. And interestingly, by the time I got my PhD, was going to get it, I was an associate professor. And so someone said, you cannot be an associate professor and be in graduate school and get a PhD. So Ben took me up to the chancellor's office and said, listen, this isn't genetics. This is something else, you know. There isn't any reason why she shouldn't be able to get her PhD. So finally they worked through that, so I was able to get a PhD. But, and you know, Ben's attitude was, you know, if it's a rule, it can always be broken, or Ben, so I was able to do that.
Now, in those years, obstetrics really did change. That's when natural child, well, you were getting your PhD and working full-time.
Yeah.
On the wards.
Oh, yeah, it did change.
It did change. So natural childbirth comes in then?
Yeah. When Lamaze first came, oh, my goodness. No one wanted Lamaze. And they all thought it was sort of a crazy thing. And even,
physicians, you
know. Oh, yeah, in Ashley, even. Yeah, yeah. And so I remember a meeting, where was it, in the basement of the medical school? With two or three of the Lamaze instructors.
Sandy O'Leary?
Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I saw her rather recently, and she remembers that. And so I went to those classes, and it seemed to me, having been a labor and delivery room nurse, that it was quite logical. And so that they were teaching women, and they started then the coursework for women who wanted to do Lamaze. And so it creeped in slowly, but a lot of docs were against it, and they thought it was so.
Your colleagues?
Oh yeah.
So what'd they think of you getting involved with them?
Well, I kind of did it. I didn't make a big splash. I mean, I just always kind of did my thing. I didn't see anything wrong with it, so I just did it.
And what years are we talking when you just did it?
Well, it had to be, 70. When did it start in early 73?
Oh, no.
It had been earlier. I would have been before my PhD. So it had been the late 63, 60s. 65, 66, 67.
Sandy got involved in this Lamaze thing in 67.
Yeah, that's probably.
So it was around the same time.
67. Then somewhere along here, I can't remember the year that we moved everything out of the university hospitals, all the OB.
71, I think.
Was it 71? And what happened is, at that time, we thought to really have the best outcomes, you'd be better off with a delivery service of probably almost 1,000, but not greater than 2,500 or 3,000. And so Ben, we're going all around the state to get hospitals to get their, you know, to join forces. And because of that, he said, well, I can't sit here with a 450 delivery base and go out and tell everybody to close their shops or join another hospital. So he decided that we shouldn't be doing OB. And that's really what happened with that. And so we closed the unit.
Now, how did he feel about Lamaze?
Well, you know, he was pretty, I don't think he'd be against it. I mean, he was pretty open about most things. I don't think it'd be one way or another. And I don't know how much obstetrics he was doing at that time.
I think he stopped in 71 when his heart valve started to leak.
So I think he stopped. And
But you were doing them in other doctors that you worked with weren't, and it just was side by side, sort of.
I just do them, doing my own thing, and that was it. So then, I told you about the case where a woman's friend had gone to all the classes with her, and she, with her and her husband. So her husband and this friend went to all the Lamaze classes, because he was a truck driver, and he was afraid he'd be out of town if she went into labor, so then she would have someone with her. And so he was out of town when she went into